Education Committee. The second is the approval of the minutes from the October 31st, 2022 meeting. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
All right, any comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, any public comments? 2.5 minutes for public comments. Seeing that we don't have any, move on to number four, which is the update from local school board members and discussion. I have asked Mr. Grabowski and Mr. Kelly, Mr. Grabowski of District 1, you guys can get up if you'd like, and Mr. Kelly from District 2, thank you for showing up today. Congratulations on your election to the board. And I guess what we really want to do is just open the discussion now that we have, I don't know if that mic is on or not, but there's a little button in front. If it's not green, it's not on. We just want to have an open discussion, elected official to elected official, especially now that we have districts. As we do cross over, we're not CCSD and you're not the town of Mount Pleasant, but you've got our residents in your schools, and we just want to make sure that we open up the conversation and just kind of see what direction you guys are headed to, and open up the floor to a discussion and any questions that that any other council members may have. So welcome. And Keith, if you'd like to go first and just kind of tell us where we're at and which way we're headed, and how we can collaborate with y'all.
Well, this is probably the most interesting board you'll probably see in Charleston in a long time, mainly because we're going to elect a new member tomorrow. So you're going to have 8 out of 9 new members. And if you look at the way your council has voted, 4 come on, 5 come on. So you have people with experience. I mean, Ed and I, it's like, you know, I say it's catching a freight train coming at you at 150 miles. You jump on board and there's a little sticky note on it that says, oh, by the way, this is full of liquid nitrogen. You got to learn how to cool it down in the next 4 minutes. And it's by the former board members. And they said, when you figure it out, can you please put it in a third grade level and let us know how you did it? That's what being a school board member is right now, because we have no clue. I mean, tomorrow I'm going to be talking about floating like a $150 million short-term bond. And so they sent me home Friday night with a lot of reading to read the history of it. And what's really interesting about financing the school board, and I'm part of the finance, and Ed can really get in on some of the policy changes. I mean, I think Mount Pleasant's blessed to have Ed and I on board, because we are looking at a lot of things that have been changed over the last 10 years in policy of what we can do. If you read Title 59, the board is very powerful, all powerful, in making sure that our kids are educated. If you look at some of the legislation on how it's funded, thank God for commercial property and second homes, because that's our only source of funding. What's interesting is, you look at our budget, we're very close to spending more than we're getting, and we're going to be counting on, we've got a balanced budget, we're actually going to have a reserve, but that's because revenue's up. But what happens if we go into a recession? You know, teachers want to get paid more, but the town, you're faced with the same problems we're faced with. FTEs, you're stuck. It's hard to take money back once you give it. I'd love to pay our teachers more. But Mount Pleasant is, when we look at the curriculum, when we look at the schools, you know, we are the shining light in the district. I mean, Wando's incredible. Lucy Beckham's incredible. Didn't build enough school seats, but that's a different story. We build cottages now instead of trailers. That's always interesting to look at. But you talk to the principals and the constituents, they're on board. I mean, you want to talk about the achievement gap? That's what we need to work with the town. And you'll start seeing a lot of the mayors, they're approaching us, building these family centers. And I think we need to get one over here. We'll probably be low on the priority because of our reading scores are so high. But yeah, that's getting the community involved into education and understanding that everybody, I mean, look, I've got a grandchild. I had to babysit this weekend. That's why I look so tired. You know, he's 1, but I'm reading to him. And then, you know, that's where we have to start instilling into our community that they need to work with their kids and be parents before they come to the school district. Because the school district's not prepared, as we see, to take on these kids. And that's where I think this conversation really needs to start going. I think the district's on the right track and has a pretty good track record on the two we've built. I think we've built two family centers. And if the focus is on kids before they get to school. Anyway, I've talked too much.
What is the policy? What exactly is the family center?
I think it's Mary Ford. Remember, we've only been members since November, and with me in finance, I've been trying to figure out about this much paperwork as to what the budget means, because it is $900 million. Ed's been working on policy, so I'll let him talk about policy and how we need to be. We're changing that. But we have two centers that we built with district money that focuses on early education and the community. They provide, they have a food bank, they have events that parents actually come over. They work with adult literacy, which is a big deficiency on the peninsula. So that's the idea, is to get, you know, to use our resources properly instead of funding, you know, summer camps or some of the other things that the district has funded in the past, but to get literacy going at an earlier age. And that's probably where you're going to see a lot of the focus over the next 4 years, at least as long as I'm involved. So, but I've talked too much.
Yeah. Thanks, John, for the invitation. So, yeah, early childhood education is a big part of what CCSD is focused on right now. Specifically, the intent is to involve family members, stakeholders, caretakers, and that's ultimately the point of the community centers, which I believe your question was, what are they, or is it where are they?
Well, what's the involvement as far as the family centers that have been created? What was the involvement with the municipalities with that, with the family center, and how it interacts between CCSD and the municipality?
So that was a project that that predates both Keith and I. So I don't know what the planning phase of that looked like with engaging with local municipal leaders. I can't speak on that one.
Something we could all find out.
Certainly, and it would seem, let's say, reasonable to engage with our local partners. It would be, in my mind, silly to take on something like that alone. I'm a big fan of small government and closer to the engage with the people. So, you guys know better than a county board what is needed at the Mount Pleasant level, and you know, a smaller community board would know what their particular sect of group of people need. So I certainly would think it would be reasonable for that to be at minimum, an open engagement, an open conversation, and probably a partnership would make more sense. So what I'm focused on at CCSD kind of writ large is both on the finance side. I'm a co-chair, vice chair, whatever the term is, of the finance committee. So I get to watch Keith bang his head against the wall a lot, and you know, plenty of words are exchanged there. On the policy front, my intent is to build ownership. So I firmly believe that ownership in their child's education is how we will fix both the literacy gap and our reading scores as a whole. And so what I mean by that is when mom and dad or aunt or cousin or whomever is the caretaker, the primary caretaker of a child, is actively engaged with that child's education, that is where the teachers will get respect and authority. That's where the teachers will, a phone call home will actually mean something. We dealt with a student, a month or two ago, where I read the transcript reports of the teachers, and it was, you know, we made a phone call home and mom never called back. We sent an email, no response, set up a parent-teacher conference, mom ghosted us, like that kind of thing. So when then of course that student, you know, they had no motivation to perform and they were sleeping in the class, text messaging and such. So if we can get ownership and involvement by the parents, that really will be a game changer. And on the policy side, I have a number of ideas. I was actually discussing with Mr. Kennedy Friday afternoon, about ways to get families to be involved in their child's education, and early childhood centers are a big part of that, of course. correcting early is way better. And my heart behind that, just so you guys are aware, is I don't, you know, with all due respect to this board and for that matter ours, I don't think that we have direct control over the outcome of children. I think we can set the stage and we can provide resources, but ultimately it's families and local communities that need to be able to execute on those. And so I view my job in government as a whole is to be an equipper and then to get out of the way, not to dictate how someone should operate. So that's my intent with the way that we're tackling policy changes as well. We put forward 4, I think, last week, and last month we got a couple more, I think 2 or 3 more coming up in the next month. And it's ultimately designed to just cut through red tape and allow parents to do their job and the government to do theirs, which is not to parent.
That is correct. Okay. Councilwoman Corley, do you have any questions or comments?
Thank you so much for being here. I am just jotting down some notes as you guys were talking because, wow, what a job. Like, that is a daunting excursion you guys are getting ready to go on. But I think it was parents weren't being heard. You know, that's what it looked like to us watching that election. And they wanted to be heard, and they make changes. And I'm super excited to see how things go moving forward, to see what you guys come up with. I was a principal once. I left my job 2 years ago. Before that, I was a teacher and a school counselor. So I kind of grew up in that circle. And I think, you know, I think about school leaders now, even in the last 2 years, and how that whole scenario has changed, you know, how this age of, what's the opposite of accountability? GM, what's the opposite of accountability?
Anarchy.
Yeah. In this culture of, you know, not being able to hold anybody accountable, how are you guys going to implement ideas and thoughts and policy? I wish you the best of luck. I know you guys are going to kill it. I'm sending good energy your way. And, you know, I hate to make it sound like I'm giving you advice, but if I had something that I personally think would be that I wish you guys would look at, and that is, in a nutshell, how to empower school leaders to support their teachers so that they can then support their students, right? So I used to always say, happy teacher, happy student, happy parent, happy me, right? So that sort of looking at each school as its own little world. And I'm pretty sure you guys know that, but just want to keep that in mind, please. And just something to think about. I spent some time in the charter world, so beginning a school from scratch and looking at numbers. I know that they, you know, there's reasons for it, but I always had a hard time coming up with exactly, no, I could tell you why. Why does it cost, right, Charleston County, what is it, what's it up to now per student? $32,000 a year, I think?
So somewhere around 8 or 9,000, I think.
Yeah, 8 or 9. No, see, the number I've always gotten was like 28. Maybe that was at a Title I school. So a Title I school, maybe.
I think the highest pay or the highest cost is early ed, and that's 16,000 students.
Really?
And a lot of what you're talking about is how much are we getting reimbursed from the state or from the revenue.
Okay.
So it's about 8 or 9,000. So what we would give a charter school is pretty much the same.
See,
the real question you've got to ask yourself is how does a private for profit charter school make money on education?
Right.
When we can't.
Right.
So the charter school is going to be an interesting discussion as we move forward. But still remember, you know, we're 3 months into this.
Yeah.
You want to get parents involved. As Ed and I both know now, withhold money. The second you stop payment to one program, boy, you sure get an awful lot of emails from parents and not from people that are involved. So it's always kind of interesting to see, how that happens, or talk about an issue. I think parents are very involved, but then, you know, our YouTube is broadcast to everybody.
Yeah.
And you see it, it's the same 150 people that are watching it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be working on different types of platforms to get out. And I think this new constituent, to where, you know, Ed's responsible for, you know, Sullivan's Island, Isle of Palm, everything east of 17. And then I've got, you know, the Dunes West through Ion Group and the Snowden Group. So, you know, and that's where I think these family centers are just, we're going to be low priority because our kids are doing so well over here across the river. But at some point, that would be really phenomenal to help so that every kid is reading at a grade level. That's one thing we both disagree with, is these guardrails and parameters. I mean, what a waste of time and money. I mean, for the grasping of the obvious, all kids should be reading at grade level, end of story. And we can do it. We know we can do it. So we don't need, you know, outside vendors to tell us.
You
know. May I ask you a question, Ms. Corley? You said, you said to empower the principals, and in your experience as a principal, can you give me, I'm kind of an opposite learner, can you give me an example of something that came maybe down from the district that was not empowering, or?
I think just when you're looking at any sort of unfunded mandate from a district, or things that, you know, as he was saying, a new program, right, that we have to implement, everybody in that school knows that, you know, some people are going to do it, some aren't. Is it going to be effective? Ultimately, you can provide all you want to, but if parents aren't reading to kids at home, you know, how is that kid? What power do you actually have to have something work out or not? I just think empowering that school leader to support teachers and give them a voice is just, I think that's the one difference between maybe a charter school system and a district system, is that that school leader has a lot of responsibility, right? Because they're accountable for that school failing. If you don't have enrollment, you get shut down. So it's an awful lot of responsibility to put on one human being. I just don't think that's a good scenario for mental health. But ultimately, you do have a lot of leeway to do what's best for your kids in your school. That I never felt in another situation, or I didn't feel it as much. And mind you, I was never a principal for Charleston County, so maybe principals feel empowered and feel like they can make decisions based on their community. But I know that I felt a lot more freedom when I mean, mind you, you still have a district, and you have a state district, and you have the State Department of Ed that you're answering to. You still, so all those accountability measures are there. It's just, I think the empowering and the fiscal liberty that you have when you're outside of that district, that's, I think was, I felt, you know, it was palpable for, but anyway, I've taken up too much time. I'm sorry. We can talk all day. If you want, call me.
Councilwoman Whitley, do you have any questions or anything to add?
Yeah, I do have some questions, but I think it's laudable what you're doing of trying to create equality of opportunity, but I think also recognizing that even with equality of opportunity, it doesn't equal equality of outcome. Just because, you know, as someone once told me, like, you can't make a chicken salad sandwich without the chicken, right? So if you don't have all those components together of the parents working with the school work and the student as that sort of tripod stool, you're not going to achieve those outcomes for the students if the parents are not involved. So, but I think that, you know, I think one of the things that's great about Mount Pleasant, as you've said, is we are sort of the shining star, and our schools are excellent. And I have four kids in Charleston County Public School District, and we have loved our experience in the schools, and really appreciate the magnet schools as well. I think one of the things that I think could be valuable in our communications is the school's resources as far as recreation facilities, and I think this is something Mr. Agafano has talked about as well, has been working on with the district, but kind of not at your level, but like kind of at the employee level, is, you know, Mount Pleasant students we're bursting at the seams with when it comes to our recreation, and I think that there's opportunity with the school district for usage of those, of some facilities. And, you know, not necessarily for free, right? We can rent the facilities, or we can, but we need to, I think there needs to be some more discussion over opportunities for field usage, and then maybe even like performing arts space. So for example, like Lucy Beckham has a great performing arts center. When they're out for the summertime, is that something that there's opportunity for the town of Mount Pleasant to go in and rent that facility for usage for the town of Mount Pleasant? So I think if that's something that you could help support Mr. Agafano's efforts in moving forward with those kinds of, with a, like a shared use type of agreement. And because I know we have also, as a town, have been accommodating to the school district as far as, you know, field space and switch swapping out ball fields and that kind of thing to help the community. So, so I think that's really.
Yeah, we have the shared use agreement we're going through right now and still waiting a little bit word on that. Mr. DeMora could jump in if he wants to on that, but we're waiting on the baseball field. I think that's through, and definitely, and we understand CCSD's point, because what you provide in Mount Pleasant, you have to provide to all districts.
It's so true. If you look at our recreation funding, it is evenly divided to every school. I mean, no school gets any more money than another school. I mean, there are some projects, like when we build a stadium, obviously, then you've got multiple use. But a lot of what you're saying is right on point. The good news is, at least my experience with our district staff, is they're good. The capital project people are excellent. So the future planning. But then you also got to realize we are going to be starting in March to work on the, you know, the 24-25 budget. So a lot of what we are dealing with right now, we weren't involved in at all. And that's why with this new board being so many new members and none of them were involved in this budget current or the 23-24 budget, trying to clean up some of the, you know, issues that we're finding is very difficult. And that's why I'm relying so heavily on Ed changing some of the policy back to put us back in line with what the legislators in, you know, with the exception of one, maybe, when they originally set up the consolidated area, because a lot of people think, well, why isn't Mount Pleasant bringing it away and being their own district? Well, because North Charleston supplies most of the revenue for the, you know, the funding of our school system. So it's really that, getting that out and getting parents to understand those little details is just so important, that this is a process. So it's good that we're opening up this conversation, but nothing's going to change overnight. Hopefully over the next 4 years, in the next 2 years, we will make major inroads with conversations like this.
Agreed. I think we can get you that. We could discuss that agreement a little bit more. I'll be happy to sit down with you on that agreement, because we would like to get that going. And we do a great job with Chief and all that, with the SROs that we provide. There's a cohesion here. And to keep them separate and to keep the education committee away from y'all is crazy. We've got to be working together a little bit more. I mean, it's our roadways that are leading to your schools. It's our citizens, right? And it's your, and CCSD is you. And our SROs are in your building. So we've got to make sure that we keep this conversation going. And I don't know, it's a lot easier now that there's districts as well. I think that's important. It's much easier with the districts, because we're more one-on-one now. So Ed, I don't know if you had something to say, sorry.
I just wanted to reply to Ms. Billy. I also, you have students in CCSD. I have three boys, and two of them are in the Mount Pleasant Rec. So that resonates very much so. And, you know, I think John and I were talking about this a month ago or something. You know, both Keith and I are residents, so we pay as taxpayers to Mount Pleasant and as taxpayers to Charleston County and, you know, the state and federal onward up. It seems bonkers to me that there would be any line of delineation between my ball field and yours, or your performing arts center and mine. That is doing a disservice to the mutual citizens that we are sworn to serve. I took an oath, as I'm certain you guys did as well, to support the students and the citizens of Charleston County, of which Mount Pleasant falls inside of. So we are walking a parallel road with the same end goal. And so I would 100% support any kind of co-support or, you know, co-usage type deal.
Yeah.
And that betters the community as a whole. It accomplishes the main goal, the main mission of engaging with families. So ultimately it furthers education.
And I have one other thing. There's a program in Mount Pleasant. I don't know if you've seen the oysters out in the hall here and seen them at Waterfront Park and at Moultrie Middle School, the art on a half shell program. And we've been trying to work with the public schools in Mount Pleasant to get them an oyster so that the students can decorate it and they can have it at the school as like a piece of art sculpture, maybe in their front lobby and that kind of thing. And I actually, it hasn't moved as quickly as we wanted it to like get these in with the schools. But I actually had someone from the PTA at Mount Pleasant Academy, where my twins are there, my youngest, and they said they got approval from the principal, but it seemed like it was more like an individual school level. Would it be better if we went to individual schools and talked to them rather than try and do it from a district level down? Because she said they're approved to do it from the principal, and so I think we can just give them an oyster and move forward. I just didn't know if there was any issue at the district level as to why we couldn't just give an oyster to the elementary schools and high schools of Mount Pleasant.
And you could do it as a fund. I mean, I think the word is that we were going to give them because we budgeted for it. And we don't care if you do it as a fundraiser for your art class. It would be a wonderful thing, by the way. Have your art students create that oyster.
Mm-hmm. So that question would likely be best directed to Mr. Barelli. I'm happy to ask that. He's the chief operating officer. As far as I know, which I'm not, you know, the expert here, but as far as I know, principals have some level of latitude from a decoration standpoint of the schools.
To accept that oyster?
I would think so. I know that there are, you know, the school, specifically the lobbies, are set up with, you know, the different security things. And so that it might not go in the front lobby, but I'm certain that a principal should, I would think a principal should be able to make that decision. And if they can't, I would certainly like to change that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Excellent. I think if I don't know if you guys have anything else you want to add, but I think today was very important for bringing us together and understanding that we all have one mission. And I appreciate you all coming out. And if anybody doesn't have anything else.
Yeah, I'd like to see the town build a lot of houses so the teachers can afford to live. Right? You know, you guys up for that? I'll fully back you on that one.
Can they go on the third floor?
I just got to get that last word in. You know that.
Can they go on the third floor of your school at Lucy Beckman?
Well, I know you're going up. You got to go up. So that's you know, I've seen worse. I mean, right.
That is. I talked to the teacher advocate group that there's not a teachers union, but a group. I don't know, an association or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And they did an estimate. They said that the teacher would have to spend 73% of their income to live in Mount Pleasant, based on current CCSD wages. And that's obviously like a, you know, first year teacher.
Well, as chair of planning, I can say that what we've put forward to council is actually it's a reduction in overall density from 12 units an acre to 8 units per acre. But half of those units would be required to be attainable housing for our workforce. So teachers, firefighters, police officers, that sort of income level. So we will see what the full council votes on, but we are working towards achieving some attainable housing in Mount Pleasant without overwhelming our public services and changing the character and the quality of life for our existing residents.
And so you're trying to move it from 8 to 12?
From 12 to 8.
12 to 8.
But it would be 4 and 4. So it would be 4 market rate apartments, and then it would be 4 attainable. So in order to get 8, 4 of them would have to be attainable for at least 30 years. So that's what we're working towards in our zoning.
You're 2 hours too late on that. That was about 9 o'clock. So, well, excellent. If nobody has anything else, we are adjourned. Thank you.